Good morning, and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book Study. My name is Anita J., and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater from Massachusetts. Today is Wednesday, February 22nd, 2017. And today we are reading from the Big Book, and we are in Bill's story on page 8. Beginning with the third paragraph, near the end of that bleak November. And we're going to be reading through three paragraphs, ending with what had happened. And we're going to take comments on all three paragraphs. Today's readers are Stacy T. for the 12 Steps, Chris G. for the 12 Traditions, and the readers of the text are Terry H. and Devorah S. The share ID number for yesterday, Tuesday, February 21st, is, and this is the difference these days, for the 7 a.m. meeting, the share code is 9619. And for the 10 a.m. meeting, our new 10 a.m. meeting, it's 9620. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. OA's tradition states, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At A Vision for You Big Book Study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. And I will now ask Stacy T. to read OA's 12 steps.
Good morning. This is Stacy T. in Cleveland. Thank you so much for your service, Anita J. 1. We admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. 2. Came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3. Made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. 4. Made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5. Admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6. Were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7. Humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. 8. Made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9. Made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10. Continued to take personal inventory and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all of our affairs. I pass.
Thanks so much, Stacy T. And now, Chris G., I have asked to read the 12 traditions.
Good morning, everybody. This is compulsive overeater Chris G. in Connecticut. The 12 traditions. Number 1, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. 2, for our group purpose, There is but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3. The only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. 4. Each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5. Each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6. An OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7. Every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8. Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9. OA, as such, ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10. Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. And 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thanks, and I pass.
Thanks so much, Chris G. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year, and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. And once you're done sharing, let us know by saying pass. Then press star 1 to mute your phone. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speaker's should be muted. Now today we resume our study of the Big Book, and we are in Bill's story on page 8. Beginning with the third paragraph, near the end of that bleak November, and we're going to read through 3 paragraphs, ending with what had happened. And we're going to have our comments on all 3 paragraphs. And I've asked Terry H. to read for us and start us off. Good morning, Terry.
Good morning, Anita. Good morning, A Vision for You. My name is Terry H., and I'm recovered compulsive overeater from Maine. Near the end of that bleak November, I sat drinking in my kitchen. With a certain satisfaction, I reflected there was enough gin concealed about the house to carry me through that night and the next day. My wife was at work. I wondered whether I dare hide a full bottle of gin near the head of our bed. I would need it before daylight. My musing was interrupted by the telephone. The cheery voice of an old school friend asked if he might come over. He was sober. It was years since I could remember his coming to New York in that condition. I was amazed. Rumor had it that he had been committed for alcoholic insanity. I wondered how he escaped. Of course he would have dinner, and then I could drink openly with him. Unmindful of his welfare, I thought only of recapturing the spirit of other days. There was a time we had chartered an airplane to complete a jag. His coming was an oasis in this dreary, desert of futility. The very thing, an oasis. Drinkers are like that. The door opened and he stood there, fresh skinned and glowing. There was something about his eyes. He was inexplicably different, happen. I just want to set my timer. Okay. So here we are. Bill's about ready to hit his bottom. I mean, he hasn't quite hit it yet, but he's on his way. And, you know, we just find out, you know, near the end of the bleak November, you know, I can totally identify with Bill. You know, I sat drinking in my kitchen while, what's the end of November for us? Thanksgiving. You know, I just remember, you know, every day became Thanksgiving. And now Bill has this, you know, he's sitting there, he's drinking, and he just gets out of the hospital. You know, we find he just gets out of the hospital, and he picks up again after, you know, Armistice Day, which is Veterans Day for us, and somebody's unmuted. I'm not sure who that is. But so, you know, we find out that Bill's crossed the line, and he has no control. You know, he has this thing, which the doctor's opinion talks about, you know, he has it in his body. He has to have it, and he has it in his mind, and he can't stop from picking it up. So, you know, right here, you know, Bill has a body that can't process alcohol, and he has a mind that can't process reality. And, you know, he's about 3 weeks into his drinking, and he gets the call from, you know, his drinking buddy, Evie. I mean, they drank together, and, you know, he always compared himself to Evie because every time Evie drank, he would always get into scrapes and in trouble. And, you know, Bill would say, you know, if I ever got as bad as Evie, then, you know, that's when I'll do something about my drinking. And, you know, so Evie calls, and, you know, now Bill's expecting him to spend the day and reliving the good old times that they had when they drank. And, you know, he's going to get a surprise. You know, I love it. I love the piece where it says he was sober. And I guess, you know, you say sober from, I say soba because I'm from Maine. And, you know, and they have that in italics. So they're really trying to stress, like, is, you know, how many times, you know, Bill's sober. He knows how to stay sober. And, he always goes back to the drink. And I look at that, you know, I know how to stay absent. There was many times that I was absent, but always went back to the food. And, you know, it's just more than being sober, and it's more than being abstinent. And so Bill thinks that, you know, Evie's going to come and visit him, and they're going to have a drink together. And, you know, where it says unmindfully of his welfare, I thought only of recapturing the spirit of other days. You know, Bill's only thinking of himself. He doesn't care that Evie's sober. And there are many times Bill gets sober, you know, and there was many times I get abstinent and always went back to that, to the food. And, you know, so I found out that quitting, you know, is not my problem. My problem is that I can't stay quit. And, you know, how many times did I, you know, how many times did I make that commitment of wanting to stay abstinent and just couldn't? And, you know, the story is, you know, that where it says there's a time we had chartered an airplane. Well, Bill's reminiscent about the time that there was a
you
new airplane.
You can keep going, Terry.
Okay,
you've got three
okay.
paragraphs.
Okay. There was a new airfield by Equinix House in Manchester, Vermont, and Abby and Bill drank all night, and they decided to hire a plane because, you know, Abby was wealthy and he could afford it, and they radioed ahead that they would be coming, and a high school band and a complete fanzine was there to greet them when they landed. And the story is after they landed, they both got out of the plane only to fall flat on their faces. They were so drunk that they just could not stand up. And I just remember those days of binging and you know, just drunk, really drunk, if you want to say it, you know, the way that we're abstinent. And, you know, I just want to take us to page 34 because, you know, Bill's got this, he's got both of this. He's got the allergy of the body and the obsession of the mind. And it says on page 34, you know, whether such a person can quit upon a non-spiritual basis depends on the extent to which he has already lost the power to choose whether he will drink or not. Many of us felt that we had plenty of character. It was a tremendous urge to cease forever, yet we found it impossible. This is a baffling feature of alcoholism as we know it, this utter inability to leave it alone, no matter how great the necessity or wish. So to end my share, you know, the door opened and he stood there fresh-skinned and glowing. So now Bill's going to see that Abby's ease and comfort, or his sense of ease and comfort, no longer comes from the bottle, that his sense of ease and comfort comes from a power outside of himself. And with that, I'll pass. Thanks for letting me share.
Thanks so much, Terry H. Now, everyone else, though, it's 3 minutes. Just saying that for our Terry, we let her go on a little. But who else would like to comment on these
Harlan
wonderful
G.
paragraphs?
Nessa.
This is Bella, can I
share?
This is Bella, can I share?
I've got you, Bella, and I've got Vasa, and I've got Larry, and I've got Nessa and Harlan.
Reva P.
Danielle O.
And Danielle O. Let's stop right there. I think that is good for me. Okay, Harlan, Nessa, Bella, Vasa, Reva P., and Danielle O. All right, Harlan, good morning.
Thank you so much, Anita. Good morning to you, too. And good morning, and thank you to Team Wednesday for making this magnificent meeting possible. We have Bill Wilson sitting in his kitchen drinking. He has triggered the physical allergy on November 11th, 1934. And Bill has a full knowledge of the problem that he got from Dr. Silkworth. Dr. Silkworth has explained to Bill Wilson about the allergy of the body and the twist of the mind compelling him to drink because of the intense pain of not drinking. He's searching for the effect, and he knows about the allergy of the body, but he doesn't have a solution. And I'm going to try to cram this into a couple of minutes, but here's what's happening that Bill only knows a very little of, and he's not aware of the fact that most of it. Roland Hazard, whose story is on page 26 of the big book, he is the certain American businessman. Roland Hazard is now going to come under the care of not Sigmund Freud, who he tried to get to, not Dr. Adler, who he tried to get to, but Carl Jung in Switzerland. And Carl Jung, from 1933 to 1934, the spring of 34, is going to treat Roland Hazard. Roland Hazard is going to come to New York in search of a spiritual experience, not a spiritual awakening yet, but a spiritual experience, and he is going to go into the Oxford Group movement at the Cavalry Mission in New York City, and he is going to bump up against Sam Shoemaker. And Sam Shoemaker is going to introduce him to another alcoholic who came to the Oxford Group. The Oxford Groupers were not concerned with alcoholism at all. They were people practicing first century Christianity, and they had a six-step program with their absolutes, and because of their six-step program, which can be found on page 263 of the fourth edition, these two guys were managing to stay sober. Through a series of events, they will bump up against in Manchester, Vermont. They will bump up against in September of 1934, Ebbie Thatcher, who is about to be brought before the judge for alcoholic insanity. Seba Graves Jr. and Roland Hazard are going to go to the judge in Vermont to try to get Ebbie to come back with them to the Oxford Group movement. The judge is Seba Graves Sr. Is it odd or is it God? The judge will remand Ebbie to their care. Ebbie will go in September of 34 to the Oxford Group movement in New York. From September to October and October to November, he puts together 2 months of sobriety. He is told now he must go give testimony. Not being a fireball of enthusiasm and willingness, he questions this, and they tell him he can either go give testimony or he can go to the insane asylum at Brattleboro in Vermont. He says, you know, I think I'll go give some testimony. And he thinks about who he can go give testimony to, and the only one he knows that he can do this with, or he won't embarrass himself, is his old drinking buddy, his childhood friend in Brooklyn, Bill Wilson. And he's going to make the call on Bill Wilson at the bottom of page 8. Bill is going to know that Ebbie is a hopeless drunk. And so the message now has depth and weight. And Ebbie is going to bring Bill the message of the spiritual awakening. I'm going to go. Of the spiritual awakening. And Bill is now going to have both sides. He's going to know the problem that he got from Silkworth, and the solution that he's going to get from the Oxford groupers through Ebby. And with that, I'll pass. Thanks, Anita, for letting me run over. Thanks.
That's all right. Thank you so much, Harlan. But nobody else now. Nessa, good morning. No. Good morning, okay. Nessa. Go ahead.
Hi. Good morning, Vision for You. This is Nessa R., recovered in Toronto, Canada. And what always strikes me about this paragraph is the impact that a recovered person has on people who are suffering, because that was definitely the case for me. You know, as I've said many times on this line before, I struggled in the rooms of OA for 9 years. And in those 9 years, I came across many people who were in normal bodies, but they weren't really recovered. They were, you know, thin people who were pompous and sanctimonious. There were thin people who were mean and rude and cutting and harsh. You know, there were thin people who were just plain crazy. And then there were the nice people, but those people were fat. And they were going to love me until I loved myself. And they had settled into, you know, what we have come to know as fat serenity, who said that relapse is a part of recovery. And, you know, not at all very inspiring. Not that I'm blaming my struggles on them, but there was just not much of a role model. And I do believe, too, that when the student is ready, the teacher appears. And so I don't think that I was ready to really hear the real message at those times. But, you know, there was no real role model. But then when I finally met somebody in whom the problem had been solved, that was to me astonishing. And I would say that I was in shock, because I think Bill here is in shock when he sees Bill, when he sees Ebby, sorry. And of course, like, you saw the before and after. I never got to see the before and after. But, you know, like, I didn't care. Like, that was enough. I mean, he was a person who lost a lot more weight than I needed, than I needed to lose, a person who had as many, if not more, life challenges than I had. And here she was in a normal body, in a beautiful disposition. She was nice and pleasant, but firm, no nonsense, you know, none of this, fake hugs and love, but, you know, like, true love, the tough love that I needed. And, you know, when I saw her, I was ready to stop digging. You know, I guess that was my bottom. I was ready to stop digging, because I saw what was possible if I only put down the food honestly and I worked the steps like she told me and developed the kind of connection with God that she had. That was so inspiring. And so it just reminds me of the responsibility that recovered people have, because we are the ones who carry the message. We are the ones who can inspire other people. And so we are responsible not only to recover, but to stay recovered so we can help and inspire others out there. And with that, I pass.
Thanks so much. I was on mute. Yes, I was on mute. Bella, you're up.
Thank you. Good morning, everybody. My name is Bella G, and I'm a thankful recovered compulsive overeater. Thank you, Anita, for doing this service, and thank you very much, everybody on the line. There was something about his eyes. Yes, I remember my first meeting when I came to OA. I didn't know nothing about OA. I didn't know what does it mean. I just knew that I want to lose weight, and this is what I believed. I am coming here to a group of people. They will tell me how to lose weight. They will tell me, they will give me a diet. I will lose weight and goodbye. And I came, the first meeting, I heard people are talking about God, nothing about losing weight. And I said to myself, oh, please, come on. What God is here in this connection? It's nothing to do with diet. And then a lady, she looked very, very, very nice, very put together. And the first time when I saw her, I really got angry at her. And I said, why this lady is coming here? She is so nice and put together. She is not overweight at all, and she most probably she doesn't have any problem with weight. Why she's coming here? She wants to make fun of us. And then she started to talk. And, you know, yes, she had something about her eyes. She was talking, and my anger just disappeared. And I said, wow, she's talking so normal. And, yes, this is what I am going through. And whatever she says, it makes so much sense. Yes, she had something about her eyes, and I said, yes, I want to be the same as her. Yes, she has something that catch me. And thank you, God, yes, now I know that she had her connection with the higher power, not with her ego, with a higher power that loves her and accepts her. And this is what brought me into the program. Yes, today I am connected to a loving and accepting power. Thank you for letting me share, and I pass.
Thanks so much, Bella G. And Vasa, oh, good morning.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you, Janice, for your service. And I'm Vasa, oh, grateful, recovered compulsive overeater calling from Florida. And I can identify with Bill's story. I was not an alcoholic, but I was a food addict. I'm going to go with this part here. The door opened, and he stood there, fresh-skinned and glowing. There was something about his eyes, and I put she eyes, her eyes. He was inexplicably different. What had happened? Well, I can identify with many things, but especially with this paragraph right here. I had been in and out with the food addiction for years, trying to up and down, off and on, always, could not keep it down. And I had known a friend through my children when they went to school. We became friends over the years. And then I would call her, and she was not returning my phone calls. And I remember her husband saying to me, oh, she's gone to a meeting. I was getting very, very annoyed for her not answering, you know, my messages. Finally, she walked through the kitchen door one morning. It was October 18th of 1986, around that time. And it was in the morning. I was still in my bathrobe, and I remember seeing her. The door opened, and she stood there. And for me, she stood there, fresh-skinned and glowing. Her eyes were just glowing. There was something about her eyes. And something had happened. She looked beautiful. I just wanted to know, you know, what happened, you know. She was like a different person because we're eating buddies, you know, and we play tennis and huffing and puffing during the games, you know. And I had no clue about Overeaters Anonymous. I had no clue about the 12 steps. I had no clue about the allergy, the physical allergy. I didn't know anything about this stuff. And again, she 12-stepped me for 1 week and told me about the disease and what she was doing. And I wanted to have what she had. And yes, I did go to my first meeting, abstinence for about maybe 5 days. And I was looking for the scales, and I was looking for the, you know, for the diets. I was looking for what I had been looking for 25 years in my life, but I couldn't find the solution. I heard differently here. You know, I heard about the 12 steps. I know my time is not coming up. I heard about the allergy. That was the beginning of my new life with Overeaters Anonymous, and I'm just so grateful. I was so ready. I was just so ready to hear the message, and I found the hope. I found the solution, and that was it. I felt at home. Thank you for letting me share, and I pass.
Thanks so much, Vasa. And Reva P., you're up next.
Good morning. It's Reva P., grateful, recovered, compulsive overeater in Toronto. These paragraphs for me symbolize a huge transition and remind me of my own huge transition, because Bill had a lot of intelligence and he had a lot of willpower, and he already had been given information and education about the problem, so he had self-knowledge at this point, and he just could not get it together. And in the first paragraph we read, all he could think about is he had some gin hidden around the house and he couldn't wait to go and get it, which is something I can totally relate to. But what motivates me, what inspires me to do the work, put my substances that trigger the allergy down, to keep doing this day in and day out? For me, and I always remember the man who greeted me at my first meeting, fresh skinned and glowing, and something inexplicably different. I had no idea what I was, what this disease was, what the solution was. And I had seen people who were dry drunks, and that was not so attractive, because I could be a dry drunk. I could be abstinent only, and it was torture. It was so not peaceful. But to see people who are not just physically changed, but inwardly transformed. These are not the same people. They have a light in them that is just glowing, burning out. That's what's motivating. So it reminds me, we are walking big books when we recover, and that's the most attractive thing, and that's what gets my attention, because all of a sudden, in his fog, in his busyness, planning his food, what he's going to have, what he's not going to have, when he's going to have it, something gets his attention, and that's what gets my attention. And this morning, I was extremely fearful. I know there's step work to be done, but for me, the fact that I can reach out to other people in whom the problem has been solved, who get through life on God's terms, which is sometimes quite challenging. And not only do they not pick up, but they are peaceful and walking through. That is so motivating. All the intellect in the world cannot compare. And with that, I pass.
Thanks so much, Reva P. Larry K., you're up.
Hi, Anita. Can you hear me okay?
Perfectly.
Okay, great. Thank you so much for your service. Larry K., recovered compulsive reader from Chicago. You know, I've heard a lot of great stuff. And, you know, here's the thing, too. Let's understand that the boost from Ebby's visit wore off. And that night, you know, Bill's feeling of hopelessness deepened and a terrifying darkness, you know, flowed in. And he did drink again. You know, here's the deal, okay? If you're waiting for your Ebby, you may find that person. I had 8 Ebbies in the first 5 years in program. I wasn't ready to put my food down, and I wasn't ready to take action. Now, you may be different, but I can tell you that if you are waiting, if Bill Wilson came out of his grave and knocked at your door and sat down with you at your kitchen table, and looking good, he hasn't been drinking for a long time, that's not going to get you well. And the reason why that's not going to get you well is because sponsorship and all the different beautiful critical aspects of this fellowship were never designed to get you well. They were merely designed, Ebby Thatcher, I divine absolutely, but all that sponsorship is designed to do is to support you and guide you while you get well. The sponsor does not bring about the spiritual awakening, because the sponsor is not your higher power. And I say that because I've seen a lot of people, and I was one of these people, that I was waiting for that Ebby Thatcher. And I had to see the distinction, because it's a real important one. In OA, there are two legs that hold up what we call Overeaters Anonymous, right? There's the fellowship and there's the program, and they are not the same thing. They inform each other, they work together, but they're not the same thing. And Bill got that eventually. The fellowship the meetings we go to, the stories we hear, the 90 meetings in 90 days, calling your sponsor. And I'm not disparaging the fellowship. The fellowship is really, really important. But the fellowship has one main purpose, and that is of support. And the big book tells us that if you got this affliction, you have this thing, your only chance of getting better is to have a complete psychic change. And you're not going to have a complete psychic change in the fellowship. And why is that? Because the Fellowship of Overeaters Anonymous was not designed to produce a complete psychic change. So this meeting, for example, was designed to come as a place for the compulsive overeater to come while they receive love and support and instruction while they have a complete psychic change. But that psychic change happens in the program. And the program is the first 164 pages of this book. And with that, I'll pass. Thanks.
Thanks so much, Larry K. And Daniello, you're now up.
Good morning, everyone. This is Danielle O. from Northern New York, compulsive overeater in Ohio. So anyway, I am from a very large family, and in this family, there's 5 out of 7 of us who are in recovery. I am the only one in OA, and I'm the only one that has successfully maintained a program of recovery in that. I say that because there were a lot of things that came my way that would have said, you're powerless over food, but I wouldn't pay attention to it. I built this world of lies even after being in another 12-step program for a while. And I really honestly believe that, you know, I didn't have to apply these steps to food because I thought I had control of it. And I spent a lot of my time thinking I did. I watch my family go through struggles, and I think, you know, I'm grateful it's not me, but it's also very humbling to watch because I have to just be very quiet and not really say much and just continue to be an example. And that's why I watch around me are people who are examples. I've been walking this path for a little while, and I see some really good examples, and then I see ones that I need to learn from. I watch my family, and it saddens me to watch how they try to manage their life. And in some ways, it's okay because most of them are sober, but when it comes to food, this is where I struggle the most. This was the one area that had gone so far back into my life that I had to get honest about it. I had to get real about it. And those were the things that brought me to where I am today. When I came into OA, it was because I had had a physical and emotional bottom. I was looking at having neuropathy in my feet because of uncontrolled blood sugar levels. And even at that point, I thought, I'll be okay. I'll be okay. It'll go away. I didn't know how it was going to go away, but it would go away. Well, it didn't. And I struggled for a little bit of time there before I found my way and I started to really get on board with what was required. I've been walking that path for a little while, and as a result, you know, I don't have the type 2 diabetes anymore because it's so well controlled by the way I eat. And that's the true blessing of this. And so if I am the only example that people see, then fine. But I know that without the help of the program, the people, the steps, the tradition, sponsorship, all the things that I have to do to maintain my abstinence, I'd still be a real pathetic person over here trying to figure it out. And just for today, I'm not. So I'm grateful that I found some truth here. I'm grateful that I have a conscience that keeps me on the right path and that my ego has to get pushed aside on a regular basis just to be able to see that reality. So thanks, everyone, for being here today. That's all I have. Thank you, Pat.
Thank you very much, Daniello. For everybody who came in late, you know, we started on page 8 with the third paragraph and read for 3 paragraphs, commenting on all of them. So who else would like to share for approximately 3 minutes?
Stacy.
Jackie B.
Wait, Marvin.
Wait a minute. Stacy B.
Lisa B.
Jackie B.
Okay. And wait a minute. Jackie B. and Charles H. and Maura Z.
Jane B.
And Charles. Give me one. And Sarah, yes, I heard you. I think we'll have to stop Deb, I'll put you down. I hopefully will get to you. Yes, this is exciting, three paragraphs. All right, Stacy, you're first. There was a Stacy, correct, Stacy T? No?
Not me.
Okay.
I was saying Lisa B. I don't know if you
heard
Lisa B.
Oh, I've got you next. Yeah, I've got Lisa B. Go ahead, Lisa. Good morning.
Good morning. This is Lisa B., a grateful, recovered, compulsive overeater in Greenville, South Carolina. And this reading has really, I want to identify in it. It's such a powerful reading for me. The first thing is near the end of that bleak November, I sat drinking in the kitchen. And, you know, any time of the day, any time of the month, it could be a really sunny day. Any time I would be happy just to be sitting there eating. And the thing that speaks to me is his selfishness. I was so churned within myself. My world had become so small. I was isolated within myself. Even though I had a family and people around me and my husband, I only thought of myself, and I was so unhappy. I felt that if other people were different, you know, I could be happy, that if other people really understood what I had to live with, they would understand why I needed to eat and do the things that I did. And what I loved was the share that talked about the allergy of the body and the mind that was incapable of accepting reality. I could not live life. Anything would set me over to the on the edge. Anything. I just was not equipped. And that's why I went to the food from such a young age. And the thing that gives me so much identification is when I reached out to A Vision for You, OA, my first real experience with OA was through A Vision for You. And I'm so grateful to have OA and be a part of OA because this is my true drug of no choice. I heard the fresh glowing skin, you know, in your eye, in your voice. I heard that look in your eyes through your voice because I never saw any of you. I still don't see any of you in person, but I heard it coming through. And I was amazed when I started to talk to some of you one-on-one that you had been abstinent and recovered for years. Some of you, 10 years, the first woman I spoke to, a co-fellow from A Vision for You, she helped me get my password and all my stuff done because I couldn't even do that. I was coming undone trying to get registered on A Vision for You. And I heard it in her voice, and I had to ask, how long have you been abstinent? How long have you been recovered? And she told me it's been years. I couldn't believe that she could be abstinent and be happy because I've tried that. I've tried to be abstinent. I had a clue. I was taught by some helpful people early on that I do have an allergy to certain substances and that if I could get off of them, my life would get better. But my life actually got worse. I can't be abstinent only. I have to have that mental, that spiritual recovery. And that's what I've heard in your voices. So thank you so much to all of you. And I'm so grateful to OA and to be a member of OA. Thank you. I pass.
Thanks so much, Lisa B. Jackie. Was there a Jackie?
Oh, hi. I'm Jackie. I'm a compulsive overeater. Thank you, everyone, for your service. This is Jackie B. from the Bronx, recovered compulsive overeater today, one day at a time. What I got out of this was, I love this part. It says, I reflected there is enough gin concealed about the house, carrying me through the night and the next day. That one and the other sentence says, I wondered whether or not I dare hide a full bottle of gin near the head of the bed. I would need it before the daylight. You know, God, I hid more Tootsie Rolls around the house than the man in the moon. Or how much stuff I could stuff in my pocket without my husband realizing that I had it. You know, anything. I mean, I left the bag next to the bed so that, you know, while he's sleeping, I can munch. You know, just running into the bathroom and hiding that stuff. Literally going to a function at a family gathering and
they didn't even open the bags of candy. And I would actually grab the bags of candy and run and go and run in the bathroom and open them. You know, oh, my goodness. You know, there was nothing. I mean, hiding in the bathroom and cutting half a cake, and then while my uncle asks, why is half a cake missing? You know, these are the things I did. Today, in recovery, one day at a time, I have glowing things. I mean, yesterday, I had started putting rollers in my hair and coming to work, and people every 5 minutes telling me, you look fabulous, you look great. Oh, I love seeing you. Oh, my God, half of you is missing. And all I could think of was, oh, my God, it's because I'm recovering every day. Every day I'm doing the footwork. Every day I'm listening to A Vision for You. Every day I'm doing a 10th and 11th step. Every day I'm calling, or people are calling me from other places, or reading meditations and sending it out to other people. These are all the gifts. This is what recovery really is me not being self-centered, a martyr, or realizing that, you know what, no one follows my script today. Today, I ask God to help me be of service, to be loving, to be caring, and to understand that I'm human and that I have a disease, but it doesn't mean that I'm not good enough to help others and to help myself by asking God to help. And with that, I'll pass. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Jackie B. And Maura Z, good morning. You're up. Maura Z? Press star one.
Good morning. This is Maura Z. I'm sorry. Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Thank you, Anita. Thank you for your service. Thank you, everybody, for the shares this morning. Oh, my gosh. So incredible, so honest. The door opened and he stood there, fresh skinned and glowing. Anita, could you watch my time, please? Disappointed but curious, I wondered what had got into the fellow. He wasn't himself. I skipped. Let's try this again. Fresh skinned and glowing. There was something about his eyes. He was inexplicably different. And I remember when I went to the beach retreat, and it was 2000. And I went to one of the meetings they had there. And I had been in LA about a year at that time. And had no idea what abstinence was because everybody told me a different definition. And, you know, could string along maybe a week and that would be it. And just struggling more so in the rooms than I had before. I felt horrible all the time. And I went to this meeting and there was what they called the sponsor line. And there were about 20 or 30 people in this line. And they were all different shapes and sizes. And they were men and women, and they were, you know, professionals, and they were homemakers, and they were mothers, and whatever it was, you know, it was the group of people who would not normally mix. And yet there was that something inexplicably different. There was something about these folks. There was something in their eyes. There was something different. And all I knew was I wanted what they had, and nothing was going to get in my way. And for a time, I enjoyed what they had, and that was good. But then it came a point when that was not enough, because all I was doing was working 9 tools to get abstinent. And when I found this particular meeting of Overeaters Anonymous, and someone told me, after I had read the doctor's opinion a dozen times, they told me to study it. And we studied it together, and we found about the allergy of the body. And I had never heard anything like that. I'd read it, and it never got through to me. So there it was, the allergy of the body, and that's why I kept picking up. And then the compulsion, the obsession of the mind. There was no way I could possibly stay stopped. So now I had some self-knowledge. Not enough. I had to do the work. And I'm so grateful to the sponsors who helped me to do the work and were patient with me and were tough with me. And today I enjoy life, living in 10, 11, 12, and recovered. And with that, I'll pass. Thank you, Anita.
Thanks. Thanks so much, Maura. Charles, and then Sarah, and Deb W. after Sarah. Good morning, Charles.
Good morning, Anita J. I'm going to apologize for all those people that stepped on you. That's just very unmindful.
No.
And that's what I'm going to talk about this morning, unmindful of his welfare. Even though Bill W. was unmindful of Ebby's welfare, Ebby was not unmindful of Bill's welfare. And, you know, we hear so much in Overeaters Anonymous, and especially on this meeting, that food and weight is not the problem. So how come we keep talking about fat serenity? How come we keep talking about, you know what I'm saying? Like, are we really being mindful of the newcomer that may think that weight is their problem? Right? Ebby was mindful of Bill. He didn't say, yo, you're really outrageously drunk. He didn't preach to him, right? Because it says coming up, he did no preaching, right? He didn't say, man, you're 800 pounds. He didn't say fat serenity. He didn't say none of that stuff. He just shared his experience, strength, and hope. He shared what he learned from the Oxford group, right? He did God's work. He didn't do God's job, right? Because no matter how much times you could say fat serenity, how much times you say that I see people in meetings, have you ever went up to them and helped them? If you said that in a meeting with people that's morbidly obese, I don't think you really helped them. You probably pushed them more back into the disease. Because I remember when I first came to OA and I heard stuff like that, and they said, oh, you can't say nothing for 90 days, and, you know, you're real big and sit up front and shut up and all that nonsense, right? They ran me out, and I did more experimentation. So are we really being mindful of the newcomer that's scared to death to say something or scared to death that they can't identify in because they're so morbidly obese? Or are we really just ego-driven by it? Because I remember being real out of control with it, and I heard stuff, and it sounded disgusting. I mean, yeah, we could be compassionate and honest, but do we have to be cruel at the same time? There might be a newcomer on here that's on life support, and we just, like, run them away. Because in closing, the recovered person, people that I hear on the line, never talk about fat serenity. Never talk about, because they're mindful of people's condition and welfare. And with that, I pass. Thanks.
Thanks so much, Charles H. Sarah W., good morning.
Good morning, Anita J. It's so good to hear you on the line. Good morning, Vision for you, Sarah W., very grateful, recovered, compulsive overeater. In reading this and hearing it, I was thinking that, you know, here he had the stuff waiting for him. You know, he had put it away, and he was saying that, I wondered whether I dared hide a full bottle of gin near the head of the bed. I would need it before daylight. Why did he need it? You know, it's all about living life on life's terms. And, you know, I can turn the first step around and say, my life is unmanageable and I'm powerless over food. And that would be just as true, probably more true. So the thought I thought of was, one's too many and a thousand's not enough. But is anything enough when I'm in disease? Nothing is. You know, it's always wanting more. It's not being able to do life on life's terms. It's being unmindful of others' welfare. It's my lack of maturity, my lack of ability to accept the answer is no. You know, it's like the little teenager in me. And, you know, the thing is, we all have to come to a place where we're willing to do what we need to do to take care of ourselves. This is not the only way to recovery, but this is the way I have found, and I have searched many avenues. You know, how can I respond to life instead of react to life? And, you know, I have to say this. I needed every single experience to get me to this place where I am right now, and so did Bill. and so do you. But that doesn't mean that you have to stay where you're at. There really is a solution. There is a place where we can find peace, freedom, happiness, where we don't have the drive and the obsession, where we really have neutrality with food and with everything. It's when we start kicking our feet and we say, I don't like what's happening to me. I can't handle it. That's what has always driven me back to the food, every single time. And I'm sure most of you are like that too. But there really is a solution. Grab a hold of somebody's hand and ask them to help you. And thank you so much for letting me share. Anita J., have a wonderful day, everybody. I pass.
Thanks so much, Sarah. Deb, I think you're going to have to wait for the second hour. I hope you can. We're going to close now. I want to thank everyone who has shared wonderful shares. Please join us for a second unrecorded hour of study immediately following closing. So we will now close with the reading from the Big Book, and you can find it on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. Would Devorah S. please read A Vision for You for us?
Hi, good morning, Vision for You, and thank you so much. My name is Devorah S., and I am a recovered compulsive overeater. Thank you, God. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of the past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.